Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Tales podcast. Thanks for joining me again. Thanks for downloading the show and showing your support that way. And hopefully, if you're just heading out the door, about to listen to this podcast on a run, hope you have a good one. And thanks for letting me tag along for the ride. This week's guest, Dave Robbo. What an amazing bloke, and his involvement in the running scene here in Australia. Just has a massive passion for covering events, I guess, and being up to date with the goings on of the sport, and has had some amazing experiences in the sport. Glasgow Commonwealth Games, was over there doing a bit of media work, and the Rio Olympics kind of tells some really good stories about behind the scenes of Rio Olympics, and some really pinch yourself moments that he really got to experience there on the ground. He's got some interesting thoughts and perspectives around the future of athletics and the parkrun scene, and just how the sport is covered. And really enjoyed talking to him and just picking his brain on where a guy of his knowledge and credentials kind of thinks it's headed, and definitely a guy I could talk to all day about all things running. So really appreciate that he gave up 90 minutes of his Thursday to have this conversation, and that I can share it with you guys here today. I hope you're well. Once again, thanks for supporting the show. We're doing really well with the Inside Running podcast at the moment with Julian and Brad, so if you haven't already, check that out. This week's interview with Sean Crichton there was one of my favourites. Brad did a ripping job. But that's enough of plugging that. Enjoy this chat with Dave Robbo. Okay, Dave Robbo, welcome to Tell Me Your Tales podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much, Brady. It's great to be on, and a real privilege, so cheers.
I wouldn't say a real privilege. It's, I think the privilege is mine. It's kind of weird talking to you because I've heard your voice on so many other media outlets around running and podcasting and interviews and live streams. It's it's a bit of a pinch yourself moment having you on the show.
Not at all, mate. No, I'll give you permission now. You are allowed to turn the sound down on any of those streams so you don't have to put up with my voice, but it's good, mate. Great to always talk running, and really enjoying the podcast work that you and some of your mates are doing at the moment. So it's great.
Yeah, looking forward to getting a bit of your advice on that a bit later on. But before I start, it's kind of good to have you on the show because I think you know so much about so many other runners and throwers and jumpers out there in the world of athletics, and especially Australian athletics. But not a lot of people know too much about you and your story. So looking forward to really digging deep into that.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to get on the show, mate, I was hoping you might be able to help me with a bit of that. I'm still trying to figure out some of the details, so it can be a good little bit of therapy at the moment. But I'll try my best at trying to join all the dots for you.
Awesome, mate. Yeah, it definitely comes across a bit therapeutic sometimes with the boys on here, so we definitely know what you're talking about there. Do you want to maybe introduce yourself to the audience, mate? Who are you? Feel free to take that any way you please.
Yes, I can. David Gordon Ted Robertson's the full name. Born and raised up on the beautiful north coast of New South Wales. Lived in a place called Yarunga, just south of Coffs Harbour, moved to Mwollumbah, had all the primary school there, and then back down the coast to a place called Dorigo for all of my high school. And then the folks moved back up to, around Lismore, and I went on to university down in Sydney, studied physiotherapy down there, took the long way, turned the hardest 4 years into the best 5 years of my life down there. And along the way, I've just always loved playing a bunch of sports, and running was always a huge part of it. More, I guess, a budding sprinter back in the school days. Made it to a few state carnivals in primary school and high school days, and as I got a bit slower, over 100 and 200, I branched out to 400 and found a bit of a home there. And best I ever did, mate, was about 50 seconds and a bit of change as about a 16 or 17-year-old. Never got under 50, so I'm more than double that age now, and I'm not giving up hope of trying to sneak under 50 seconds again for a one lap. In more recent times, mate, I guess the running path turned into a bit more longer distance stuff. My now wife, we studied physio together at Sydney Uni. She got bitten by the distance running bug thanks to her sister who lives in Cape Town in about 2004, just as we were starting to go out. And it was a bit infectious, and I thought, I've kept myself pretty fit playing a bunch of team sports, cricket and soccer and rugby over the years. I'll have a bit of a crack at some longer runs. And I remember running for an hour for the first time and thinking to myself, well, you're silly enough to run for an hour. You know, what's an hour 20 or an hour and a half? And it started to sort of increase from there. Got talked in by a mate to doing my first City to Surf in 2004. And we enjoyed that. And then a month later was the Blackmores Half Marathon, and we sort of jumped into that as well. That was a bit daunting at the time. And since then, yeah, I've just continued to really enjoy challenging myself over, I guess, longer distances, which don't come as natural as the shorter stuff. But, did my first marathon in 2008, had a goal of trying to sneak under 3 hours, and I missed it by a few minutes, and it set in motion what has become a prolonged saga to try and break 3 hours, or 2 hours 60, as I call it, and managed to do that after about 10 attempts in Sydney this year with a sneaky 2 hours 56. So I've got that out of my system now, but really enjoy distances right up, you know, from a mile right up to that marathon distance, and park run has become a sweet spot for me, is something that I'm really a big advocate on, and have helped get it going here in Newcastle, where I now live. So I don't know if that's really answered your question, mate, but yeah, I guess physio, runner, I have a wife and two kids, young kids, they're 5 and 2, I'm 36 now as well, so there's a bit thrown into all that, but I guess these days, I try and talk about running as much as I can, do as much running as I can, surround myself with running and athletics as much as I can, and just, I guess, try and promote activity. I see my role as a physio these days largely just trying to, you know, get people off the couch, get them moving in any way that they can. And as you and I know, mate, running's the best way to do that. So just trying to convince the world to get moving more often, and something I'm passionate about. And, hopefully if anyone's listening to this, I'm sure they're probably already converted, but they can, you know, high five the next person you see coming the other way, and share what I call a positive exchange, and celebrate the fact that we're all out there having a trot and listening to a running podcast.
Yeah, so many directions we can go with there on that introduction, mate. But why running, do you think, for you? Like, was it just because you kind of were involved at a young age there that you just stuck around that same sport for so long?
Yeah, I guess so, mate. It's something. I did okay as a kid, but as you get a bit older, it doesn't take a lot of organisation, I guess, to fall back to it. Doesn't need a lot of equipment, doesn't need a lot of cost. Can be done anytime, wherever you are around the world. And I've travelled a fair bit. Gabby and I, you know, we spent 4 years over in the UK. We were able to work and travel over there, and really that's where the marathon running seed was planted over there. We did our first marathon in 2008 up in Edinburgh. Got in with a good group up there and really fell in love with it. So I guess that sport has continued to just be there, you know, either just under the surface or well and truly in the focus. I've played a few seasons of cricket over in Edinburgh, which is a a strange thing to have done, but got involved over there, and that was a lot of fun. But yeah, the running, I guess, is something that I've been, you know, keen to continue. Dabbled with a bit of triathlon, got around an Ironman course once back in 2010. But yeah, it's just, I think it's running, it's just so simple. It's so effective. It ticks all the boxes, and it, you know, it clears the head. It keeps your body going. It keeps a bit of weight off it. It makes the world better. It makes the world a better place. And I think, you know, air feels cleaner. Food tastes better. Water tastes sweeter, all because of running. And I think it's a bit of a drug for me, and I'd struggle to do without it, to be honest.
Oh, for sure. Imagine if everyone in the world just went for a half an hour run every morning. The world would be such a better place, I think.
Well, you're right, Brady. All the problems in the world, you know, we'd have world peace instantly. We'd just basically sort out all the dickheads in the world. I often say that, mate, as you know, you look at some of the issues in society at the moment, you know, I just think, well, mate, you know, you needed to have a run this morning and just get your life in order a bit, as opposed to committing that crime or you know, doing the wrong thing. So I agree, mate. These politicians, they need to be advocating, you know, running activity in some ways, but, you know, what if it's parkrun or whatever it is, get more people running. I think definitely the world will be a much better place.
Yeah, the one thing about your positivity, though, Robbo, is it spreads across all aspects of running. So, like, I know you're heavily involved with the parkrun, but you can also pull out stats of, you know, Fukuoka Marathon that happened on the weekend and how many years ago Deke won. So I think your knowledge and your spread across every part of running is so important for the Australian community to encourage people to get out there and be active.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice, mate. And that's, you know, that elite side of the sport is something that I reckon, you know, I personally take a, you know, get a huge kick out of being in touch with that pointy end of town. And I put, you know, yourself and your fellow 220 marathon colleagues in that same boat. It's great to even hear on your Inside Running podcast at the moment, you know, about training and how things are going. But we're all just human beings. We're all breathing the same air. That's the great thing about running. It's a real leveler, and park run in particular, you know, it's got to be one of the only sports in existence where you can be shoulder to shoulder with an Olympic marathoner on the start line. They've still got to scan their barcode. They've still got to cover that same 5K course as you. So yeah, you know, it's a magical sport in that sense. And it's nice to, I guess, you know, try and stay across, the history of the sport and the history that's being made in the current year as well. I will say a lot of those stats aren't committed to memory, mate. I know where to go looking for the references, but yeah, you know, I certainly enjoy celebrating the sport and to have been able to build a relationship with, you know, with someone like Rob DiCastella and Steve Monteghetti, these household names of running, and I call them mates. And I pinch myself even now. You know, Monters was up here a year ago in Newcastle, came up for a run from a running shop up here, Pure Performance, came out, ran 8Ks with us or whatever, and then stood around and delivered, you know, a bit of a question and answer session. And for everyone in that crowd, it was magical. And you know, it's a nice thing. And the sport struggles a little bit, as you know and listeners will know, for mainstream media coverage. So when we've got these superstars and we've got the ability to use new media, social media, to spread the word of our sport, I think we're mad not to do it. So yeah, it is exciting, mate. And I count myself very blessed to be involved in the sport the way that I have been.
Yeah, what do you think about that division between, like, the park run crowd and the fun run crowd and the elite running side of things? That's we had Malcolm Norwood up at Echuca to launch our park run, you know, earlier in the year, and a 212 guy, Echuca resident for a big part of his life, and a lot of the locals didn't even know who he was. So it was quite eye-opening for me that just that elite side of things is just a huge gap, whereas I think in other sports that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Look, I think regardless of how much a person's achieved, you know, just to be able to relate to them at the start line of a park run or the opening of a new park run and hear some of their stories, you know, they're on the whole, even the marathon running and the marathon training that I've done, you know, I'm lucky enough to live in the same town as Scott Westcott, oldest bloke to compete for Australia at an Olympic marathon. And I was lucky enough to tag along for a number of his sessions with his squad in the lead up to Rio last year, and I was documenting it a little bit on the way. You know, we're kind of all bashing away at the same sort of thing. Scotty was writing a blog at the time, which I was convinced could form the basis of a you know, Australian marathoner's Bible, just these stock standard sessions that he's been doing for, you know, about 20 years or so. And he was had it passed on from his influences, Pat Carroll and Mona and Deke and Dick Telford coaching and stuff down in Canberra. So we kind of are all doing pretty similar sort of stuff when we're training for a marathon, whether you're shooting for a 2:15 or a 3:15 or a 5:15. The long run's crucial, those quicker sessions during the week and the recovery stuff. So I reckon, yeah, the elite stuff is great. I guess we can put them on a pedestal, but we can also, you know, not be afraid to go and have a chat with them and ask them about their training and get some advice related to our training. And a little anecdote I can share with you. I remember meeting Benita Willis, or she was Benita Johnson at the time, at the Great Edinburgh Run, 10K run in Edinburgh. She won it that day. And we went and had a chat with her. My brother, who we lived with as well, my dad was there, and Gabby, my wife. And I remember her, you know, we were just like, oh, how good's this, Benita? You know, she got the win. She actually gave my wife the winning bouquet of flowers that day, which we touched on. But Benita wanted to ask us about our training. You know, you guys are doing, we told her we're doing our first marathon the next week. And she's like, how's it going? And what sessions are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that was really nice. And I think across the board, runners are, I reckon, the best people in society. So it's rare to find a runner that's a dickhead. And so it's nice to be able to share that with runners of all abilities, not only the pointy end, but, you know, all the recreational runners as well.
Yeah, I agree, especially the people we've approached to have on the podcast. I think people want to, I think almost elite athletes are a bit lonely in a way, like they want to share their story and just probably haven't had as many opportunities as we think they might have had, especially to do kind of detailed interviews and spend some time really talking about their training. And are definitely approachable. Everyone we've approached has been more than happy to give us some time, and I'm sure you've found the same in your role in the media.
Yeah, definitely. And if I can give you a wrap again, Brady, what I really love as well, you know, and this is to in no way take anything away from you and Brad and Julie and what you guys have achieved, which is fantastic. And we call you elites, don't worry about that. But I reckon the stories from people like yourself who maybe not quite getting on those, you know, Aussie teams and getting to Olympic Games and Com Games, those stories, that's almost in a way you hear some, it breaks a few more barriers and you get some really good stories from there, because you guys are quick enough and good enough to be training at that level. You understand what it takes. You've seen firsthand what it takes to get to that level. You've got an understanding more than, say, you know, some of your mid-packers and back-of-the-packers at a park run. And I reckon there's some great anecdotes and stories to come out of from you guys as well. And that's why I'm really enjoying what you've been able to do with these couple of podcasts. So we can relate through you guys even more with some of these elites, because the really, really top guys sometimes don't have an idea of just how good they are, and it can maybe struggle to break it down a little bit for the benefit of us hackers, you know, at the back of the pack. So mate, I think it's great what you've been doing.
Yeah, we find the same. Just having guests that, you know, probably not so much the faster. When we first started, we thought the faster the guest, the more better downloads. And I'm sure you might have had a similar experience back in the day as well. But it's the people who you can relate to, or the people who are going out at 5 a.m. in the morning when the general runners are, have to get their work done, not the people that can, you know, sit around on Instagram all day or kind of train at 10 o'clock in the morning. They're a bit harder to connect to.
Yeah, the Liam Adams interview, you know, I got more out of hearing him juggle and balance his work as an electrician and getting up at crazy hours to squeeze in the work and the training than I probably took out of, you know, some of his stories from being there in Rio at the Olympic Games. So, yeah, it's breaking through that sort of stuff, and it is good, yeah.
For sure. Hey, talk me back to when did the media stuff kind of kick off for you? Like, were you always a student of the sport back in the junior days, or, like, how did emceeing events and launching your own podcast back in the day, and, you know, you're one of the Run For Your Life top 10 influences of Australian running at the moment, I'm pretty sure I read an article about that.
That's
a good one. When did all that stuff start kicking off for you?
Mate, I reckon, it was with the running side of things and athletics. I guess I was too busy playing a million and one other different sports as a kid growing up, and I wasn't a huge devotee to the sport of athletics as a youngster. That was probably more something a little bit later on. I guess I, like many kids growing up on the north coast of New South Wales, you know, I idolised the rugby league players of the day. And I remember I got to meet the captain of the Balmain Tigers, Wayne Pearce, at my primary school one day, and that was as good as it was ever going to get at that point. So, and I'd listen like we all would. You listen to the commentary on the radio for the cricket or on the TV for rugby league, and you know you'd have a little dabble at doing a bit of commentary. And I guess I'd always thought that'd be an awesome job. Travel the world calling sport didn't really seem like a job in a way, and I always sort of had that, you know, bit of an interest in covering sport in some regard. But it's kind of by accident, mate, the way the athletics and the running media side of things sprouted out. Mate of mine, Silas Mossy, is a health professional as well. So his background is as a sports scientist. And I heard, I knew about him. He was here in Newcastle, had a gig on the radio as a separate job that he did, calling ABC grandstand A-League games predominantly, but a bit of rugby league as well. So I knew about him and I knew his voice, and I was like, oh, that guy's a bit of a legend. Anyway, it turns out he started to work at the same health practice that I was at here in Newcastle. And so we worked together delivering health campaigns and projects and stuff around the Newcastle and Hunter region. Anyway, I had this little blog started up. I did an Ironman, trained really hard for 12 weeks, and once that 12-week program finished, I'd done the race, ticked it off, and then I kind of just needed a break to clear my head and just get away from that very rigid training protocol. And so I had a couple of weeks where I just didn't really run at all or didn't really exercise much at all. And then after that couple of weeks, I sort of decided, right, I want to just get back into running, but I want to do it without worrying about anything. I was just going to go for a run for the fun of it. Don't know where it'll be. I don't care what the, you know, the distance is or what the pace is. And I just incorporated all these fun little things. I wanted to sort of engage with people when I had a run. I don't like the idea of two runners passing by and not acknowledging each other. So I had this little challenge where I wanted to say g'day to at least five people on every run and instigate what I call a positive exchange. Might be a high five, might just be a nod or a lift of the finger, but just an acknowledgement. Run somewhere different that you've never run before, run on different terrain, change it up, run different speeds, sort of make it up as you go along. And another part of that was to run naked, which is not obviously taking all your clothes off, but just, yeah, leave the watch at home and just sort of make it up as you go along. And I'd kind of been bound by this. It was before I had a GPS or a reliable GPS, and I would sit on map my run or, you know, GMAP's pedometer, and I'd map the run out. And the day came where I spent longer mapping the run out than I actually took to run the thing.
Yeah.
I thought, ah, this is crazy. And I was becoming a bit of a slave to the statistics of it all. So that was this idea of running naked. Anyway, Mossy sort of got wind of it, and I'd started a blog called Experience Running. We went on a run together, and he said, look, tell me all about it. And I did, and that was interesting. He said, cool, let's do some stuff together. Let's get you involved. We teed up a radio interview for ABC in Newcastle, and the presenter there just latched onto this idea of running naked. She's like, oh, that sounds great. You know, it sounds a bit cheeky. What's it all about? That'll create some attention. So I got invited to come on. It was a New South Wales wide program and talk all about naked running and my love of running. And we quickly thought at that point, let's call our little project the Naked Runners. It's a bit sexier, it's a bit catchier. It obviously leads to the question, are you really taking all your clothes off? So it's a good little conversation starter. And then kind of that just got a bit of momentum, and Mossy, who'd done a bunch of podcasts and had his radio background, said, well, let's start a podcast, the Naked Runners podcast. And we just bashed away at it. You know, it was very rough early on, and we did it over Skype, and every now and then we'd catch up and do it in person. We started interviewing some people, and it was back in a day, Brady, when podcasts weren't really that cool. Nowhere near as cool as they are now.
So. You guys were really early, but that's like, you guys are the pioneers. We're just coming in. Everyone's got a podcast these days. I feel a bit like we're a fraud kind of jumping on the bandwagon late. But, yeah, you guys had some big guests. Like, I remember listening to you. So some of your guests,
it was
mate,
good, like, yeah. So we started off with some local sporting identities. I think we interviewed Scott Westcott about six times on the show. A few other local top runners in Newcastle. Dave Bradney's a guy that won the Landy Mile at Azadapec once. I think he ran a 4.4 flat for the mile down there. Newcastle fella, Celia Sullivan. And then just some local parkrun identities as well. And it was at a time when Newey Parkrun was just kicking off. I was launching that. I had a trip overseas and, yeah, caught up with Benita Willis over there, had an interview with her, got Kurt Fernley on. And, yeah, all of a sudden we just sort of started getting a little bit of momentum with the show and could start to approach, yeah, some bigger name athletes. And, yeah, you know, you got to do the rounds with getting Deacon and Steve Monteghetti as well. We got a whole bunch of guests, but we ended up finishing on episode 69 with a tribute to Collis Birmingham. We wanted to make it Collis the Musical. And so it's there if anyone's interested to go back and have a listen to. But that's where we've parked it for the time being. It's not the end, but the Naked Runners podcast is currently parked on episode 69. We might resume it one day, but I still haven't probably answered your question. The podcast started, Scott Westcott, who was running the Hunter Track Classic at the time, he was organiser, he invited us to come down and just do a little bit of commentary, completely free gig, unpaid, and Mossy, I couldn't do it one year because I had a housewarming. Mossy did it on his own. He went well at it, and he said, Robbo, come and get involved next year, and I did a bit of the field announcing, and I remember I got to interview Danny Samuels at the time, and I'm thinking, how good's this? She was really nice, and, you know, she's a legend. So I thought, this is a pretty good little gig. Let's keep doing that. And we just sort of kept plugging it away at it for a couple of years, and they started to pay us a little bit. And then this idea to do a live stream came up, and we had a fair bit of freedom with doing that, and it seemed to get a little bit of traction as well, and that was 2014, and then started to do some of the Athletics Australia meets as well that season. I think it was pretty rough and ready, but I think the community of athletics sort of responded well. Just the fact that the sport was getting a little bit of coverage, you could watch something like the Hunter Track Classic, even if you had to turn the sound down so you weren't listening to us crap on. But you could at least see it now, and these athletes loved it too because their sport now is getting a little bit of coverage. The diehard fans could at least pick it up. The mums and dads loved it as good as anything. They could see how the kids were going and cheer them on that way. So that was kind of the getting the foot in the door, mate. And then just got approached by a few fun runs locally and then got a good relationship with Athletics New South Wales with some of their other events, and it sort of went from there. So, yeah, it's been good. It's pretty unplanned, but, and I've learned a lot hanging around Mossy, who has more formal media training. And I've just sort of, just bashed away at it as best I could and slowly immersed myself in the sport and got my head around the nuances of track and field, which I reckon it's one of the most information-laden sports and technical sports there is around the world. And when you've got a sport that's got three things going on all at once and you've got to try and do each one justice, it's a huge challenge, and it's something that I reckon the sport doesn't do that well, the fact that we compete for attention on the track and in the field at the same time. So it's been a challenge, but it's been a lot of fun and opened up doors that I'm sure we wouldn't have, and opportunities we wouldn't have got, in other more established sports.
Yeah. Can I ask why you guys stopped doing the podcast?
It was just becoming, it was taking a bit of time, as you know.
Mm. And it would have been more time back then too, wouldn't it? Like the programs these days, we just click a button and then you just drag the file onto iTunes and you're pretty quick these days.
Yeah, that's right. And so I was doing the bulk of the editing, and which I didn't mind doing. I mean, I enjoyed learning that and getting that all up to speed. I guess it just became a bit of a burden for our families as well. And it's the kind of thing, you're never going to make a lot of or any money out of doing podcasts. It's a hobby, and it's something that you do for the love of it. And I'm certainly keen to do something again, whether it's under that platform of the Naked Runners or something else I might do on my own. So I haven't shut the door on it. But, yeah, at that time, that was kind of just a parking of that and see what else, see what else we can drum up. So it was just a week-by-week thing. It was just becoming a little bit tough to commit to. And when you have the choice to, spend time with the kids or go and hang out with Mossy for a couple of hours and bash away at a podcast. It's just a few choices needed to be made there. But I love to get back into it. We both love it. That's the thing, if we had all the time in the world and you could squeeze it all in and balance it in, we'd still be doing it today, I'm sure. But one of the other things with Mossy, that first run we had, ran about 17Ks. Now, he's a pretty fit bloke. He's played a lot of field hockey over the years, but I ran him into the ground and he got a bit of a plantar fasciitis on that first run I took him on. And he then proceeded to be injured for about the next two or three years. So the old Naked Runners partnership, it was a bit tough for Mossy because we were talking about running all the time and interviewing all these fantastic people, but the poor bugger couldn't run. a lot of the time. So, yeah, that was a bit tough for him.
Oh, that could be all right, though. You don't want two of you, too many, like, alpha running males, you know. Julian and I have arguments every week because we both want to be the elite runner, and unfortunately he's the only elite we've got at the moment. But, I could say that could be not a bad thing, not fighting for that same spot. Hey, you must have some pretty amazing stories of athletics kind of meet you've been to and athletes you've rubbed shoulders with. Obviously the 2014 Com Games and the Olympic Games at Rio. Have you got some good stories for me and the listeners to share?
Yeah, mate. That Commonwealth Games, I mean, going back to that year, that live streaming stuff that we found ourselves in the middle of, it was bizarre. We did that Hunter Track Classic meet, and then Athletics Australia, you know, they said, right, let's have a crack at some of these live streams at some of our other meets for that season. So we got flown over to Perth, and I'm in a hotel room with LaShawn Merritt, like within half an hour of touching down, doing a little bit of a colour piece, asking him what his favourite fruit was. So that was pretty strange. The two go for two and five fruit and veggie campaign was a sponsor of the Perth Track Classic, and so that's how that was all framed up. And yeah, so that was pretty wild, and so that night, yeah, we're on this sort of what we call the tartan couch, interviewing the likes of LaShawn Merritt, and then yeah, Sally Pearson peeling a banana for Sal as we asked how her hurdles race went earlier in the night. Like it was pretty bizarre, and we just sort of had to float along as we went. I guess that season domestically, the nationals was the culmination of it, and we're down in Melbourne. And so, yeah, it was a who's who of Australian athletics. And so whether it's Benny Harradine or, you know, Kim Mickle or, you know, these superstars of the sport, in a way, because the tartan couch became such an identity on its own, and the reward for winning your event was to get an interview on the tartan couch on the live stream. I remember Jeff Risley saying, you know, he'd busted himself all year to get a crack on that couch, and finally came true. So... It was a thing that the athletes strive for, to get that interview on the couch. It was a lot of fun for us, and you know, we sort of prided ourselves. Our style wasn't the rigid, serious journalism and presentation that the sport, you know, sometimes has. We try to have it as light-hearted as possible where we could, respecting the athletes, respecting the sport as much as possible, as you need to. But yeah, having a joke and finding the lighter side of things when you could. So. Yeah, so you know, that whole year was fantastic and a lot of fun, and we said to ourselves, let's keep it going. Let's try and get over to Glasgow in some capacity and be part of the Com Games circus over there. And we managed to raise about, I think, over 12 grand in a crowdfunding campaign, selling tartan couch T-shirts and getting the good people of Australia to get behind us. And we were able to create a daily video, you know, blog, a Roy and HG style daily wrap up. It burnt us out big time over there. I wasn't having a lot of sleep. We'd go to all these events, and then I'd be up editing a video to get up, you know, up online before the sun came up, which didn't happen that often. And we had a lot of fun following all the coverage over there. But probably, mate, to answer your question, the big moment was probably the Sally Pearson hug at the end of her 100 meter hurdles final.
That's right.
All the pressure was on her, and the coach had, you know, heaped a bit of shit on her, and he'd been sent home, and she had to come out and get the job done, and she just needed someone to hug at the end, and we were there with our inflatable kangaroo jumpy, and she ran straight over to us, and it was a bit awkward, I got to say, mate. Like, you know, when sometimes someone hugs you and it goes for a little bit long, I was like, oh, you know, feel free to go and do something else if you need to, but there's a lot of emotion there that she needed to release, and it was great to be able to help her out and help celebrate from the beginning. And I think, you know, if you see any photos or video of it, I'm losing my shit. She's losing it, and all the Aussies and Mossy and everyone around us are just going crazy. So that was a real pinch yourself moment. And every day of those games, we just kept saying, oh, it can't get any better than this. And the next day, something else would happen and something else would happen. So, yeah, that was incredible. And, you know, Jumpy himself, he became a real icon of the games over there. The Scots all loved him, and he ended up getting, when Kim Mickle won her gold medal, she ran over and she says to me, I'm having him. And she grabs Jumpy and takes Jumpy on a lap of the Hampden Park track, waving him up into the crowd. And Jumpy actually had a night in the athletes' village that night. but because none of the athletes wanted to blow him up and risk getting any germs and getting sick, he got a little bit deflated and had a pretty big night, I think. So we did get reunited with him the next day. But yeah, mate, that was good. And then moving on to Rio, I guess we sort of thought, well, we had a taste of that sort of stuff. Let's try and do it at the big one over at Rio. And that was weird too. We thought about crowdfunding for that, and I just launched a campaign. Anyway, I entered a competition with a well-known chocolate manufacturer, Cadbury, and the prize was a trip for two to the Rio Olympics, accommodation, flights, and bit of spending money and some tickets to some events. And you had to put a video in convincing Brazilians to cheer for Australia. And we did the cliched thing, you know, we linked the green and gold, and we made a new nation called Brustralia, combining their medals with our medals, and we'd have a reciprocal cheering arrangement. Anyway, it worked out well, and we won this trip over there, and found ourselves there for the Olympic Games, which was amazing as well. And probably a couple of the big highlights, definitely on the track, being there in the stands watching Ryan Gregson be the first bloke in 40 years, Aussie bloke, to get through to a 1500 final, and was sitting with his family at the semi-final and for the final as well. So that was incredible to be there for that. And there's one night there we just hung on. It might have been that night. But we just hung on. We hung around. Security's trying to usher us out, and we didn't really have too much of a plan. And we ended up sort of staying in the stadium because we couldn't figure our way out of this place. And it was Usain Bolt's last night on the track. He'd won the relay, got his three golds, and we thought, oh, we'll just go over and see if we can say g'day. And we ended up finding ourselves sneaking down closer to the track, and the aim was to get a photo of Jumpy on the track. And no one was really that interested in us. And we managed to get down there, got onto to the track, and got our photo with Jumpy. And then we thought, well, no one's really that interested in us still. So we did a little lap of the track.
On the surface.
Yeah, this is probably, I don't know if it's been revealed too often. I haven't spoken too much about it in public. I certainly didn't speak about it in public while we were there.
Get locked up.
I didn't want to get in too much trouble because there was a bit of trouble happening. But yeah, my crowning moment was getting out into lane eight, the Wade van Niekerk lane, where we'd watched him set the world record from lane eight a few nights earlier. And I did a barefoot 400 in lane eight with the dip and everything at the finish. Mossy's filmed it. So that was fun. And we kind of, right at the end, no one was that interested. And a few of the guys that work for Spikes magazine came out. We've got a few photos with them. We're walking under the tunnel to get out of the place. We thought, right, it's about midnight. We should get home. And then anyway, walking out of a door, all these marshals and volunteers and stuff, and then there's Usain Bolt just coming out of a door. And it was one of those moments where I was like, I had Mossy was standing beside me, had Jumpy in his arms, and I was like, oh, what do we do here? You know, you try and get the selfie to capture the moment. It was all being rushed through very quickly, and I just thought, no, there's no time for that, and just said, g'day, mate, g'day from Australia, well done, and got the handshake, and that was a special little moment. I think we got a photo with Asafa Powell a little bit later on. They were all knocking around. Usain was out to throw a javelin, I think, out in the infield for some Jamaican TV stunt. But anyway, yeah, we saw Usain, and then we saw ourselves out, and luckily didn't get mugged at the train station and got home safely. So that was probably one of the standout moments of that campaign over in Rio. So again, super, super lucky. First time I've actually seen any Olympic athletics action. And to be there for each of Usain Bolt's races in his last ever Olympics was something that you just tuck away forever and tell the grandkids one day.
What was it like, mate, just being involved, I guess, so deeply with that Commonwealth and Olympic experience? Like, we watch it all on TV and you only get so much kind of perspective. But, yeah, what's it like being on the ground kind of close to the athletes? Are they tense? Is it as organised?
Yeah. It was Rio was a really interesting place. It's not a place I'd ever been before. I'm not sure if I'll go back there again. And it had a lot of trouble dealing with hosting an Olympic Games. To be honest, they probably shouldn't have even had it, given the social problems that exist in that city and that country. But they pulled it off, and on the whole, we felt safe the whole time we were there. It all worked well. We could get around pretty well. So we had a bit of contact with some of the athletes, especially the marathoners. Our first morning there was the morning of the women's marathon, and we were staying in a hotel that was right on course. And so we got to hang out with some of the Aussie men's marathoners that day, and Adam Diddick, the coach, Liam Adams, Scott Westcott. And yeah, it was cool to catch up with them and just sort of see how they're settling in and get a bit of the vibe. And you know, the marathon was great. It was a kind of a 3-lap course. So we got to see the girls and cheer them on hard. So that was great. And I caught up with Scott at this golf course that had been taken over, the entire golf course, probably the most, you know, little well-to-do suburb in Rio. Nike had just taken the whole place over to create this Nike town, and I was able to go for a run with Scott in there. It was a few days before his race in the marathon, and they were going a bit nuts running around the village, apparently, because there was a little 2K dirt track that they could run on, but there wasn't much else on offer. So he was loving the fact he could run around, you know, 15 or 16 holes of a golf course on the grass in a pretty idyllic setting. So he was, you know, he was pinching himself. He had thought that dream had long gone of representing Australia at an Olympic game. So he just soaked it up the whole time, and it was awesome to be around him. It was like he was a, you know, 12-year-old kid, and just he was pinching himself. So yeah, but our experience, you know, it was a little bit hectic. We stayed right in the city to start with, in Rio. And it just felt a little bit dodgy at times, but the people were super friendly. We tried our best to learn the local language, the Portuguese, Brazilian. We did okay from that regard. But yeah, look, I think any time you're over there, you're happy to, you know, dress up in the green and gold, have an inflatable kangaroo. It breaks the ice with all the people in the crowd, and athletes see you and they're happy to, you know, to take the cheers. And yeah, they you know, as much as it was tough, probably for the people there, and I'm sure some of the poorer people wouldn't have been able to sort of get too involved with it. But it seemed to be it was a really exciting time to be over there. And the Olympics is just such a big circus, you know, amazing to be at those games and cheer those Aussies on. And you know, the track and field team, I guess we didn't get you know, huge amount to fill the medal cabinet up with, but some really, really good performances, especially in those distance runs by the females. And to be there for steeplechase and the 5,000 metres, to see our girls go around and just holding it with some of the best in the world was really awesome. And, yeah, I think there's a lot to be positive about with the sport. There certainly feels like a bit of a wind of change with the sport of track and field, and hopefully, you know, it'll be rewarded at future Commonwealth Games and Olympic Games, especially now the doping stuff seems to be hopefully, you know, getting a bit more a handle on that by the authorities. So that's, yeah, it's good for our guys, and look forward to hopefully doing it again. We'd love to get back to, obviously, yeah, get up to the Gold Coast next year and have some part to play in covering stuff up there, and then move on to Tokyo, which will be Olympic Games a little bit closer to home. In 2020. So, yeah, look forward to it.
Do you find dealing with different athletes that some are a bit higher strung than others? Like, I'm imagining the marathoners are just a bit more chilled out maybe than some of our track and field stars. Yeah, marathoners. Yeah.
They're the most normal ones there, mate. My theory is, Brady, the longer you run, the more time you've got on your feet to sort out all the problems in your head.
Yeah.
So I reckon ultra runners are even more chilled out and down to earth than it. Guys and girls too. So yeah, now the distance runners are always a great crowd. Highly strung. Yeah, I guess some of the athletes who had a bit of pressure on them and were expected to do pretty well. And you know, we weren't certainly trying to get involved with any of the Australian athletes or trying to interview them or hang around too much until after their competition was done, and then they're super relaxed and they're happy to come out and enjoy the action, and we could sort of sit with them and catch up with them as well. But Ella Nelson was one. You know, she had a fantastic run in the 200 metres event. And, you know, we were catching up with her and we got to know her parents a bit. Actually, you asked about stories before. There's a funny story with her mum. I actually punched her mum by accident and split her lip. Ella Nelson's mum was standing in the line waiting to go in for one of the sessions at Glasgow. The Com Games, and yeah, I got a bit carried away with my right fist, and I didn't see her there, and ended up splitting her lip. So, sorry again, Jules, for that. But yeah, so you know, it was funny with the relationship we got with the live streaming stuff. You get to know the athletes really well, but yeah, you've got to know a lot of the family members as well, and they sort of got on board with what we were trying to do, also. So that was pretty cool to enjoy that, and even in Rio, you know, we're hanging out with Eloise Willing's parents and. You know, they're pretty tense and pretty nervous, and to be able to to share the experience and the, you know, Ryan Gregson's mum and dad and his sisters there as well in the stands. You know, they're biting their nails to the bone, cheering their boy on, and we can be there to share the highs and share the lows as well, where there's disappointment. So it was pretty special to get a sense of what it was like to, you know, to be an athlete over there. We count ourselves as failed, you know, elite athletes. So the next best thing is to be over there, wear a bit of green and gold and dance around and cheer for them all on and soak it up. So yeah, we were on a massive high.
But I think in that tense environment, having guys like you to balance it out a bit would be really important and probably a thing that a lot of the elite athletes didn't realise at the time that was happening. You guys just providing that support and providing that humour and that positivity and just really diehard fans, as you said.
Yeah, big fanboys. That's really all it is. And it was a funny line that we tread between, you know, representing media or journalism, if you want to be that, extend the definition pretty broadly, but, and then, you know, yeah, being mates with some of these athletes as well and just being, you know, huge fans. That's all we were ever really intending to do, was just to really get in their corner and just be massive supporters. And I think certainly in Glasgow, having spent all that time in the season leading up to that, the domestic season, getting to know a lot of the athletes, yeah, there was that bit of a familiar face. Oh, there's these idiots, they're over here. You know, somehow they've made their way over, and we got to hang out with some of the athletes and do some interviews, even in the holding camp in Gateshead, just out of Newcastle, before the action actually started. Too, you know, to be able to go and run Newcastle Park Run with Marty Dent and Mel Paniotu was pretty cool. Actually, paced Marty for the first 200 metres of that park run.
Did you go out in 36 seconds or something? 3 minute K pace, yeah.
We're trying to catch my breath from that, And then, you know, they needed a lift back to the hotel, so we're in a cab with in a car with our friends, and we did this little interview where we're interviewing Marty and Mel in the back of the car, driving them back to their hotel where they were staying. So just, it was really cool just to get that access, I guess, and try and continue to celebrate the athletes as much as possible. That was our biggest thing to try and do, get their stories known and get their faces known a bit more to the Aussie, not only the athletics community, but to the wider sporting community as well, and be champions for the sport and for their causes. And we were super lucky to be able to have that access and to build those relationships and continue to support the team in that way. And if it helped ease some nerves, or if it helped to, you know, people just take their mind off the stress of the situation, then that's great. But just basically, you know, the green and gold cheer score, that was our role.
Yeah, right. Do you think times are changing with that media kind of role now, though, with social media and podcasting? And I just know, like, you look at the charts of iTunes, the top podcasts, you know, they're not coming from very successful journalists. It's people like you and me kind of trying to get real stories and just have conversations with people, and that authentic kind of conversation that you guys are having in the back of taxis with Marty Dent.
100%. Yeah, 100%. And it's never been easier, Brady, you know, to get your story out there, whether it's writing a book or publishing a podcast or recording, you know, an album, getting it out there. And it's fantastic. And we're mad not to, if we're not using these platforms to do that. So you don't have to wait to be picked anymore. You don't have to wait for Channel 7 to come and say, hey, yeah, we want to give you a gig to come and interview some athletes. You know, you can celebrate the sport and be part of it in these other ways, and like you guys have done, you know, getting legends of our sport and some of the lesser known names as well of the sport involved, and getting their stories out in the open is fantastic. It's never been easier to do, and I think it needs to be done as well. So, you know, all credit to what you guys are doing, and to many others in the athletics community, to use that example, and running community that have done the same thing and really, you know, fired up there. Facebook pages and Instagram accounts to celebrate the sport. So all power to everyone that's using this new media. And, a funny thing, actually, I was quoted, or I was overheard to say to a guy that worked for the Australian Olympic team, the Australian Olympic Committee, and I made some point of saying, you know, TV's dying. You know, no one's going to be watching TV pretty soon. It's all this live streaming. It's all what's in your hand. And there happened to be a lady that works for Channel 7 who helped do this Channel 7 coverage, and she was nearby, and he sort of said, oh, well, don't say that to this lady here, you know, she works for Channel 7, but she was like, yeah, yeah, totally, you know, that's everyone's about the second screen. I actually reckon more and more now the second screen's the big one. The first screen's the one, you know, on your mobile that you're probably, you're glued to that more of the time, engaging, you know, on Twitter when there's a race on, or and every now and then you'll cast an eye up on the big screen. So it is changing, mate, and, you know, when we were doing that stuff for Glasgow, that's coming up to 4 years ago. I was thinking even by the time the Comm Games and the Gold Coast come around, it's going to be pretty different. And I think it's still all unraveling. And but you can now do this sort of stuff, be your own TV channel if you've got a bit of a following and you do it in an authentic way. I think there's a chance to be, you know, pretty successful with doing this stuff.
Yeah, I found the same thing the other day. Like, the main TV was on in our lounge room, and it's almost like background noise now because I can pull out my phone and watch Instagram stories of videos that people I've chosen to follow are creating, and it's just there for me. Like, it's, yeah, why would I prefer to watch whatever Channel 7's put on at 5:30 on a Sunday afternoon when I can watch stuff that I've chosen to follow intentionally?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so, and that was us in Rio. The marathon's on. You're at home as an Aussie supporter. All you want to see is, you know, how Scotty's going or how Jess Trengo's going. Get a little headshot of them, and we scratch around for little bits of coverage here and there. But, you know, the stuff that we were able to do is give a few little social media updates from the side of the road right there and then. You know, you can be sitting at home and bang, we're bringing that into your lounge room and that very authentic discussion that we're having with, with Jess's parents as she's running. We're getting told to take our inflatable kangaroos off the course by security. We end up getting photos with them, and so all this stuff was coming through. But you're right. It's it is very interesting times for the whole media landscape, and a sport like running and athletics has a lot to gain from opening its doors to all those opportunities.
Yeah, I agree. And the live streams are a good thing as well. Like, even just like being at the 5K champs the other week, like, you know, you can watch every one of those heats on a live stream, the New South Wales 3Ks the other week. Like, that's just a given now that has to happen. And you look at who's in the, you know, there's 100 people in the stands, but those YouTube videos have had thousands of views. Like, that's where the people are watching from.
Exactly. And that live component, Brady, is so important. No, we demand it to be live. Live streaming technology's got so much better. Like, there was no Facebook Live back in 2014, and it was a bit clunky and tough to set up all the equipment to get those streams happening. But we got it done and figured out a pretty good system. But now, I think it's criminal if an athletics event isn't live streaming, especially a big champs event like that 5000 in Victoria. You know, they're kidding themselves. You can now cover the sport in so many ways. Using Periscope, using Facebook Live, live on Instagram, whatever it is, it doesn't have to be the best coverage. Like, Jack Hale runs, if Jack Hale breaks 10 seconds, I want to see it. I don't care if it's shitty, grainy footage someone's taken on an iPhone from the back of the stand on a cold night in Hobart. I want to be able to see that and live that in the same way. I want to see the Zatopek 10,000 champs. And I'm a little nervous to ask the question, but I bloody hope they're streaming that this year. I did it tough myself down there doing Instagram videos. I did 25 Instagram videos back in the day covering Zatopek 1 year and giving the splits for the men's and the women's race. So that was intense. And then I was down there with an iPhone on a tripod covering the one the next year. I think that was the one to go over to Rio, Eloise Willings.
That's right. Was that on Periscope that year?
It's actually just on Facebook today. I'll have to share it. It's come up today. It must have been couple of years ago, and I'm running around, and Eloise Willings is right there, and Periscope was just blowing up, all these love hearts and all these comments and stuff, and people are saying go and interview, and I probably overstepped the mark a little bit in terms of my access that night, but that's if I'm a fan, that's what I want to see. Take me to Eloise. I want to see the reaction, and she was, you know, we all saw her smile and that joy, and Daisy Neal later on in the men's race as well. So to be able to bring that to people and have them enjoy that is fantastic. But at the very least, put a stationary, like put a live stream, an iPhone or a smartphone up the back of the stand and just show me the race. I don't even care what the commentary's like. Like, a lot of people bag out the commentators and stuff sometimes. Don't worry about that. They're having a crack at it. Just show us those races. It's crazy if we're in 2017, almost 18, and we're not using that stuff that's out there to cover our own sport and sell our sport. We need to be doing more of it.
Yeah, and I think you guys probably accidentally caught Athletics Australia by surprise when you guys kind of started covering that Hunter Track Classic and then all of a sudden found yourselves covering the World Challenges that year as well, or just the
the Melbourne World Challenge and then I think, yeah, so I went Perth, Melbourne, Sydney. Perth was a bit regrettable. I mean, we were up when we were up and we were down when we were down. The Hunter Track Classic went so well and the community was like, yeah, great, we need more of this sort of coverage. We got a lot of the credit for it, which we shouldn't have because it was the actual technical teams, a couple of guys locally from Newcastle on the Central Coast that did all the actual streaming. We would just talk the rubbish out in front with a microphone in hand. The one in Perth, we unfortunately the internet coverage wasn't good enough in the stadium and there was problems throughout and that whole stream crashed and people were getting blocked, locked screens and stuff. And we got absolutely shit canned for that, for being the faces of it. And people were like, oh, these guys are garbage. You know, it doesn't work. We're back to the bad old days. And so we had to cop that on the chin that it didn't work for that one. So the pressure was on to get it right at Melbourne and then in Sydney, which luckily it did. And then the Nationals as well. So, yeah, but yeah, you're right. Totally, it was by accident. Here's a way that you can cover the sport. Cool. Let's roll it out. It's doing a job. It's not Channel 7. It's not as polished as what you might get, you know, watching Bruce McAvaney call the Olympics. But it's something, and it was a bit of a start for the sport, and it's now created that situation where, yeah, if those big meets are on, they have to be live streamed in some way. There's no question. They have to.
And have you got any inside knowledge, mate, that you can share? Like, are you guys doing that again this season, or do you know what's coming up?
Never know. You never know. And Athletics Australia, I know they've always got their hands full with many different things going on at once. Maybe. Not too sure yet. But I'd love to, if there's no official capacity, I'd definitely love to be up there on that new track up at the Gold Coast for Nationals doing something. I'll take my own inflatable couch up and do something outside or out in lane 10 or something, but we'll see what happens with that, mate. I can't reveal too much to you because I don't know myself, but being at Commonwealth Games, yeah, that was kind of what we said years ago and was like, you know, Commonwealth Games coming up on the Gold Coast, home games, if we're not having a good crack at something there, you know, we haven't had a go, and so we thought we'd speed it up a bit by trying to get over to Glasgow and doing something there first. So we'll wait and see, mate, but yeah, it's going to be exciting, and the Aussies, as we know, are geared up to do very, very well, especially in the Athletics. So can't wait to get around them all again in some capacity.
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, back on that point, though, it shouldn't have to be you doing it off your own back and going up there and just taking tripods and phones and all those kind of things, because what you've done in the past has worked so well. You'd think they'd be onto it and locking you guys in and getting it sorted pretty quick.
Yeah, well, mate, stay tuned. We might be able to get the Tell Me Your Tales, Inside Running, Mossy and Robbo, Naked Runners. We could get a little thing happening up there.
We'd be more than happy to be involved. Yeah. It's funny, though, how, like, the people are creating it because the big corporation hasn't, in a way.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, yeah, it to throw large sums of money at it. And this, you know, one of the things I can sort of share with you here, Athletics Australia were in that year 2014, we were getting those meets on TV, either on Channel 10 or 1HD, but we weren't seeing them live. That would happen the next day. So it was really weird for us. We half of our stream, the pictures were really pro because they were taken from another production company who were feeding them to the Channel 10 coverage or package, the 1 hour package that they put on the next night. So the crazy thing there was that was having to be paid for by the sport itself, by Athletics Australia. So that's not a cheap thing to do, to get on free-to-air telly. So you want the other thing, the other way happening, where Channel 7 saying, we want to cover this, we want to inject funds into the sport, and there needs to be eyeballs, there needs to be commercial interest, and that's something that we struggle, I guess, so much with here in Australia, because we compete with all the codes and all the other sports. But yeah, I like what they did with the Nitro stuff. I know that probably left a fairly big hole in the pocket. I think that, you know, lost a bit of money on that first year of that, but that was a new thing to try, and I think a successful experiment, and it got people, you know, buzzing about the sport in a crucial time. So who knows what'll happen, mate? But But yeah, at the very least, it doesn't, you know, channel, even Channel 7 themselves, or Channel 10 or whoever it is, ABC, you can throw a stream on in, you know, in the back end. It doesn't have to be actually on the terrestrial TV channels, you know, 7, 8 or whatever. Throw it on the back end. And Channel 10, as an example, have covered hockey, like national championships in Australia that way. So there is something that they're getting out of it, and they're getting the eyeballs and the advertisements and things like that. So anyway, we can continue to go rogue if we need to cover the sport, but you'd hope in time the sport can get big enough and get enough sort of commercial interest to get it done in the way that it deserves to.
Yeah, you're right. That Nitro was a pretty good example, because I think that was maybe delayed or whatever it was. I remember having to change my location of watching it from Sydney so I could watch the stream live instead of staying up to watch it live on TV, which was, you know, so people, it's like the app that actually Seven put out for the Olympics. Like, you just download the app, go on at any time, Apple TV, it's your big screen, you can watch it live.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many ways around it.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
What do you think of Nitro? You said it was a good concept. Do you reckon that's the future of athletics?
I don't know if it's the future, mate. I certainly liked the way that it was that it shook up the sport. I reckon you and our listeners probably got a soft spot for the running events, and to me they were the big successes. I mean, Usain Bolt was there, and he was always going to get the headlines and the attention. But that 3-minute challenge, what a concept! What a fantastic thing to roll out, and then the elimination mile still could probably tweak it a little bit, but. You know, I was buzzing. I was watching that. I watched the first two on TV, and then was lucky enough to get down there for the third one and had a microphone in my hand calling a bit of women's and men's pole vault, which was a bit of fun, just trying to rev up the crowd a little bit. Didn't have a huge amount to do on the night, but I was there and on the infield, sort of living the dream. You know, only 10 meters away from Usain Bolt as he was getting ready for his relay at the end of the night. So that was kind of pinch yourself stuff, but I think it was good on the whole. Yeah, great to see a brave move made. And I think, you know, having those events that aren't related to the pointy end of the season, like running a 300 metres or running a 150 or those mixed relays, they were a bit of fun too. And the 3-minute challenge, where you don't have a benchmark to compare those to, really, and you're kind of just seeing how everyone's going to do. So yeah, they were a lot of fun. And for me, To relate that back to the recreational runner, like I had this little campaign going, righto, see how close you can get to, you know, your predicted 3-minute distance, yeah, you know, the 3-minute challenge distance. And for some people that can run pretty well, you know, they're going to hit a K or get a little bit further, and others might hit, you know, 500 or 600 meters, and that's their benchmark and that they can continue to improve on as well. So that was something that I reckon was done very well, where they could roll that out across other recreational fields.
And even the connection they made with Parkrun, I think Parkrun at Albert Park that weekend maybe finished on the track, and it had a bit of a Nitro theme that week, so it was good to incorporate that side of things as well.
Yeah, brilliant. And Seb Coe was there. It was his first ever Parkrun. He got up in front of the largely Australian crowd that morning, and he declared in his entire athletics career he not once had been beaten by an Australian, but he was expecting that to change that morning, and I think 250 of us beat him home that day. But yeah. That was killer. That was amazing to incorporate the track, the first 200 and the last 200 of Albert Park run there. Sinead Diver getting the Australian record that day too was pretty exciting. And, we almost got an attendance record at that event. So that sort of stuff is critical. And it's something, again, that Athletics Australia has been a little bit slow at figuring out to link up with something like Parkrun, which is just this, you know, behemoth, the way that it's come on the scene here in Australia. And Parkrun doesn't really need Athletics Australia, but I would say Athletics Australia definitely needs to hold hands with Parkrun and attract that and bring it under its wing. And it's funny, you know, that the average Parkrunner probably, if you interviewed them at the finish line anywhere around Australia, they're not going to say that they performed the sport of athletics that morning. Athletics is probably seen as what Sally Pearson and her mates are doing on the track, you know, at the pointy end at an Olympic Games. It's we all just run, don't we? It's just running. But it is incorporated into that broader definition of what is athletics. And it's an interesting little time. But running, as we know, you know, you look at the numbers for Gold Coast Marathon every year, 25,000 people turning up over a weekend to have a crack at multiple distances. And the running boom just continues to get stronger and stronger. Whereas, you know, throwing a javelin for your club at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, that's probably got a limited future. I certainly support the fact that we want to try and, you know, encourage kids and more of the community out there to get involved in the broader sport of athletics, but the running is what's really, you know, keeping it going and will continue to, I reckon.
Yeah, next 10 years are going to be really interesting too, I think. Like, you just look at those parkrun numbers. And you guys, have you got like 5 different parkruns in Newcastle? You guys get thousands every week, don't you?
Best part of 2,500, mate. Where I am now at home, I'm looking across. We actually bought a house on the course, effectively at about the 2 and 3K mark of what's called Newey Parkrun.
Strategic buy.
I'm looking straight across now and just having a look at the course, which is good. But if you don't feel like you're up to finishing the whole thing, you can just nip off home, I guess. But it's awesome, mate. Newcastle's probably just the right size place, and it's very much, I guess it's more like a Geelong, a big regional centre close to the nearby, you know, capital, metropolitan centre. But it feels like a very big country town. I call it the biggest little town in Australia, and it is very connected. And the word of mouth has really helped, you know, get Parkrun as established as it has. So we've got 12 events in what we call the Hunter region, Newcastle and Hunter region. We cheekily called it the region of runners there at one point, and it's a name that's kind of stuck. It's probably going a little far to call Newcastle the region of runners over somewhere like Ballarat. But we claim that, and it's been cool. We sort of said it as a joke to start with, and people sort of started believing. And so, yeah, every Saturday morning across those 12 events, the, you know, best part of 2,500 people, sometimes more, are running or volunteering. And that's been awesome to see that grow. And I had a bit to do with getting the first one kicked off in Newcastle from basically purely, selfish reasons. I wanted to be near where a park run was and was able to achieve that. And then it's just continued to grow. And always knew it was, ever since I did my first park run up at the Gold Coast, I knew it was just such a fantastic concept and it would do well in Newcastle, but probably never anticipated just how well it would do. And to now see well over 200 events around Australia, and I've got a hard time keeping up with where they all are popping up. And probably the greatest thing, Brady, that Parkrun has done is not cater to the needs of runners. It's cater to the needs, the health needs of those that never, ever contemplated running at all, let alone running and achieving 5 kilometres. And they might walk it 1 week. They might run little bits of it. They eventually get to a point where they achieve what I think is the greatest achievement at Parkrun, a non-runner running the entire 5Ks without stopping. Then they sort of classify themselves as a runner. Then they start to worry a bit about what sort of time they've done it in and start to shave pretty big chunks off that time. So that, to me, runners will always find events and training sessions and clubs and groups to be part of, but it's fostering people, we'll call them sitters, and fostering them and getting them involved in a really unique and powerful physical and social environment, and hopefully they then become park runners for life. It's certainly what's happening around here, changing lives for the good.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, mate. Same in my community. Like, it's set up for those people that are going to walk it for 4 or 5 weeks, and then they're going to run the last K 1 week, and then hopefully in 12 months' time, they're going to run the whole thing, and then they just get super competitive. Then I've just watched a few people from the sidelines, might run 45 minutes, and then they're telling me it's 43 minutes, and then, yeah. And same just guys who might have given up footy a couple of years ago who just want to break 20 minutes, and then there might be five of them, and then they want to break, 19:30, and you're just looking at these guys who... I was training with a bloke this morning who did his first mono fartlek, and they're like, they just have never been exposed to that world before, but now because of through Parkrun, they love it. But I still find it, I can never imagine these guys going to the track and doing an athletics meet. I still see this massive division between athletics and Parkrun. And, a lot of the fire, I'm sure, if you asked the majority of 5K Parkrunners all over Australia on a Saturday morning, who were the 3 5K representatives at the Olympics last year, they'd have absolutely no idea. Like, it's a whole completely different world.
And it doesn't matter to them. That's right. And I think you're right. That's probably one of the biggest nuts to crack, is how to convert the running boom and that park run wave of success and getting people involved in traditional athletics on a track, which is seen as daunting straight away. I've got to be some sort of good level of runner before I deserve to be stepping onto a track. But the more ways that athletics, track and field can cater to that park run crowd, make it non-threatening, get them on there, have fun, get them back again. That's really crucial. And I've seen it this year, actually, in a few instances, a little bit buoyed on by what was done at and what was tried at Nitro, I reckon. But I was part of an event in Homebush, Sydney Olympic Park. Athletics New South Wales put it on. It was actually a charity day. And there was a couple of really cool things happening. There was a community 5,000 metre race. There was a couple of races, but you paid an entry fee, but you could pay a bit more to request a pacer, a personal pacer. So you said, right, I want to break 20 minutes, or I want to do 19:43 or whatever. Someone would help you do that. And so that was just a really nice, I guess, supportive way to get people who would normally do parkrun and have a time in their head for their parkrun PB, get them on the track and see if they could break that and just get them to experience running around circles on a track. There was also an event there which was trying to break a record for running the laps, most laps with the most number of shirts on. So three of them did it. Dave Crinity was one of them, Simon Wollneiser, Jess Baker. And they run a lap, put a shirt on, run a lap, put a shirt on. I think they got up to 56 laps or something. They broke the record, which was like 53. So that was a bit of fun. And then even just this week, I stuck a video up on Instagram last night, a thing called the Jingle Bells Relay, which is, I would say, we might have had upwards of 100 people, maybe 150 people at the track, most of whom would be park runners and would never be seen at that track in town here in Newcastle. It was a 25-leg relay, so you're doing your 10,000 metres as a team, and the idea is to try and get as close to the men's and women's world record as possible. It's not really the big deal-breaker, but people had a lot of fun, and the number of people that did that and do that each year and say, oh, that's my first time running on a track, and, you know, it didn't kill them. They had a lot of fun with it, and that might get them back in the door to come and do a quarter session one week or come and do, you know, some intervals in an organised sense another week. So that, as you said at the start, that's really a key aspect, a key thing that the sport is trying to do, I know, in all the states. And I think, yeah, there's big benefits to broadening a runner's experience, not just that park run, but getting him involved in an 8K fun run, or getting him involved running a 400 or an 800 or a mile on the track and mixing it all up a little bit. So it's one of the great things. There's so many ways you can do it. Trail running, ultra running, you know, there's so many ways that it can be done. And I'm seeing it here in Newcastle, and had the privilege to experience a lot of races, more than I have in the last 5 years, this year as well. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're doing some great things. I'm the same. I've had to say to a couple of people at Echuca, just, you know, probably the best way to improve your 5K isn't banging out a 5K time trial every single Saturday. I'm like, maybe try and modify like one Saturday and do this some Saturdays, minute on, minute off, and then go back, and they just run massive PBs.
Yeah.
Because won't run during the week, just 5K time trial, week off, 5K time trial, week off.
That's right. It's probably a good percentage of park runners do that. I know there's plenty here. And look, you wish them well, and you wish that they, you know, congratulate them on doing that as opposed to not running at all.
True.
But yeah, getting into the sport a little bit more as they start to get concerned about times and paces and whatever, they can start to get big gains by just tweaking things a little. Yep.
That's exciting to see those people make the big gains. And I always make sure I tell them, like, don't take this for granted. Like, I haven't run a 5K PB for 4 years. Like, when you get to a certain level, it just doesn't happen right anymore. So just every Saturday when you do this, it's a honeymoon period.
That's right. My old man was lobbing off 2 and 3 minutes at a time. He got into park run very late in his life. And 36-minute first run, bettered by about 3 or 4 minutes for the second one. It is exciting to see,
Hey, talking about people who haven't run PBs for quite some years, you kind of touched on it at the start when you're talking about your marathons. Maybe talk me through the debut and then what happened in between before finally breaking through at Sydney this year.
Yeah. Thanks, mate. It is an epic journey, and I wrote a race report for the Sydney Marathon this year, which is up and about the place. But I've actually got a longer format, which is sort of detailing the journey from that first marathon in 2008 up until when I was able to do it this year. I read a book. A mate of mine loaned it to me. It's called Running for the A Team. It's written by a fellow over in Brighton and Hove in the UK. And his saga lasted about 16 years. He'd been trying to break 3 hours and was getting agonisingly close. And he had a mate that used to always say, you know, until you've until you've broken 3 hours, you're not running for the A team, you're running for the B team. So that was his little thing that he kept trying to do. But anyway, it was a good book, and it inspired me to write it, put a few things down on paper about my experience. But yeah, 2008, first marathon, didn't know what I was in for. Had done a bunch of half marathons, had a goal to try and get that 3 hours or as close to, and hopefully sneak under it. Trained, I think, you know, pretty well, having nothing to compare it to, but got some solid long runs in, and was training with a group from a running shop in Edinburgh. And so, yeah, it was all in miles back then too, which was interesting. So it's a different mindset running 26.1 miles. You get a bit more value for your distance markers when you're doing that sort of stuff. So I had to learn all the splits, 6 minute miles and 7 minute miles and
yeah,
what that all was.
Worse than hearing interviews of people like marathon talk. I know you listen to it. Whenever they have someone on talking about splits and miles, I'm just like, I'm gone here, guys. I've got nothing.
All I know is five is eight. So if they say 8 minute miles, it's a 5 minute K. And then try and sort of work it out from that. Three is five minute. Mile, 3 minute K, roughly, maybe a little bit off, but yeah, no, I'm the same, mate. Yeah. I've lost that conversion now. I'm back to metric for sure. But
sorry to interrupt. Yeah,
no, it's good. So yeah, anyway, we hit the start line. Brutally windy day. We're into a headwind for a lot of it. And I was just trying to tuck in behind dudes on the way out, and pretty flat course. You know, nothing really too remarkable about it. Pretty much like an out and back sort of thing, And I was feeling pretty good. We're still on schedule. Just got onto this little bit of a dirt road sort of section, and I could just feel a little bit of a hamstring cramp starting to bite. And we still had about 8 or 9 k's to go, I reckon, before getting back home. So got to finish on a race course, and with about like 300 to go, just got this most severe hamstring cramp. I've had a few from playing footy and stuff over the years, but this thing was just, it wasn't letting me go at all. And all these people are willing me on. And so that dream of trying to get under 3 hours was just passing me by as I stood clung to a fence barrier for a good couple of minutes, just trying to sort of, I should have just rolled it, but I was just trying to get my breath back from this cramp. Anyway, so yeah, that was a 3:04 first attempt. Still stoked, you know, didn't know much else to compare it to. So that was cool. And then the next year we moved back to Australia and did the Gold Coast Marathon. Thought I was in better shape than I probably was. It was a year like many of them when Monageti was pacing the 3 hour bus, and it was a huge crowd to stick with him early on. And I thought, oh, I'm not going to get a drink at any of the drink stations here. I'm feeling pretty good. I'll just go ahead a bit, and that strategy worked okay until about 25, 26 k's, 27 k's. I started to do it a bit tougher than I expected to be doing, and then that horrible feeling where the pace bus starts to creep up on you. And I reckon crossing over that bridge at about 30 k's, starting to head up that hill, I got passed by Mona and not
the finish line as well. Yeah,
and it's starting to get pretty warm there, and you're pushing into that wind, and there goes Mona and not quite as big a crew at that point. And so yeah, did it really tough, 3:08 for that one, and Mona came through. I don't think it was anyone with him that day, and I've put it to Mona a few times since that I want my money back, because he called himself a 3 hour pacer and he didn't do the job with me. So that was a bit disappointing, but I probably, if I'm honest, I hadn't done the work to get through it. I was probably running on the fact that I'd done a marathon before a bit too much. So next year I do the work, put it in, I'm ready to go, I'm fired up to try and finally break it. I do the Sydney Marathon, a little bit lumpier course. People are saying, oh, what are you doing that one for? You know, it's nice and close to home, so there's not a lot of travel. And I thought, it'll be right. You know, just rolling hills around Sydney. And it's not, to be fair, it's not too bad. And it's nice to actually break up a marathon, I reckon, with a few changes in terrain. However, I got talked into doing a live radio interview the day before. I don't know if you've ever listened to Australia All Over, Brady, with Ian
Macca.
But you'll get him on a Sunday morning. You know, he's an institution. My dad went to primary school with him, and we had lunch with him the day before. And I told him about, I'm doing this marathon. Been raising money for the Cancer Council, and I've got this thing called the Naked Runners. He says, oh, that's great. Ring in. Call in on your run. I was like, no, you're crazy. I'm going for this 3 hours. No way am I doing that. And he kept at me, and I agreed to do it. So at about the 6 day mark of that run, I get put through to him to do this live radio interview. And just at that point, I'm going up this short climb down near the Mrs. Macquarie's chair section of that run, and I ran probably for about a K or so doing this interview. But I was feeling good, you know, I felt good and I was chatty, and the bloke said to me that day, you know, if you just shut up, mate, you could bloody win this thing. And I was just high as a kite, thought, this is it, done the training, done the work. Another guy said to me a bit later on, look, we're probably not, you know, you're probably not going quite fast enough to be where you need to be. These paces aren't probably reliable enough and you're probably better off going a bit ahead. And I kind of dismissed him a bit. I was thinking, no, I'll be right, just stick with these paces, they'll be fine. And we got to 4Ks to go, and I look at my watch suddenly to pay attention, and we've got to do 4-minute Ks to get home. And I was like, oh, I started to panic a bit. A couple of Ks out, there comes the cramp again, and fell off where I needed to be. Unfortunately, both the paces, neither of them made it home under 3 hours, and so there's a few other people got a bit pissed off with that.
Yeah.
On that particular day. I wasn't too bad. So I call it a 2:61, 3:01:05. It was my time. There was a bloke from Ireland there. He did 3 hours and 20 seconds. He was in tears at the finish line. So again, I was in good shape. I was in the shape to do it, but I probably shouldn't have done that interview. It probably cost me a little bit, but a lesson learnt nonetheless. So that was the PB for many years, 2:61, and had a few more cracks. Had a crack at Sydney the next year. It was really hot, and then blew out to a 3:20 something. Did a marathon the next year off very little training at all. Felt good to 30Ks just after our first daughter was born. Ran with my two siblings, my brother and my sister, which was cool. But yeah, that was horrible. The last 10Ks of that, so it was like a 3:40 something. Did a barefoot marathon that same year in Denver. That was a bit of fun. We had a trip over there. That was a bit under 4 hours. And then had a few years off and just focused on park runs and things, and then got back into it this year and ended up doing 3 marathons this year. So one in Tahiti, got an opportunity to run a marathon in Tahiti, absolutely humid, sweating buckets by halfway. Actually led for the first 5K, which was something I wouldn't recommend doing again. But it was fun, and I was treating it like a long run because I did the Canberra Marathon 2 weeks after that. Probably took a bit more out of me than I cared to admit at the time. And I was with the 3-hour group at Canberra till about 33Ks, and just some of those hills out the back there sorted me out, and it was a very, very lonely last sort of 5-7Ks or so there, and I think it was about a 3:15 or 16. Again, I wasn't quite in shape enough, if I'm honest, and that showed in that back end of the race. So then I'm like, right, let's just get this thing done, and I did some of the biggest weeks and months of training, easily the biggest weeks and months of training I've ever done. You know, for a recreational runner, I managed to get out to 500Ks, I think, for the month of August, getting into 120, mid-high 120s for some of the bigger weeks, and just was able to put the time in. I've got to say that one of the keys was probably the second longer run, the midweek long run on a Wednesday, getting an hour and a half to sometimes 2 hours in a hilly trail section with a few mates. That was probably one of the key things, hitting the long runs like I wanted to. So I was pretty confident, hit the start line, this is the day, and it kind of all fell into place. There were still cramps at the end, but I had enough in the bank to make sure that I was prepared to roll over the line if I had to. It's a funny moment. I come up the home straight and Pat Carroll's calling everyone through. And then a photographer caught the moment beautifully. I've just got this crazy hamstring cramp once again with about 40 metres left to go, and there's Pat Carroll consoling me, just saying, mate, don't stuff yourself. But by that time, yeah, I was confident I'd get under that 3 hours. So big tick next to it, mate, and it was good to finally get there. So I can get it out of my system. I think my wife, Gabby, is happy to have the fact that's finally done and I can let it go now. But yeah, it's an epic adventure, and I got a bit emotional at the end there, but absolutely wrecked. Probably the hardest K of the day was the 1K from the Opera House back to the hotel I was staying at. I was pretty beaten up, and to make matters worse, I ran that run in a pair of 5 fingers, which I wouldn't recommend doing, but I just sustained this little bit of an issue under one of my toes, and that was my way of running pain-free. So I reckon it was about 16Ks too long in that pair of footwear. I've done barefoot stuff before. I've run in minimal shoes before, so I knew I'd get through it, but I could have done with a little bit more support, I reckon, in the last 10Ks or so. So that just made a little bit more, added a bit more drama to it all, but it was good to get it done.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. It's a That's a pretty epic journey. I guess what's next? Like, you know, will you go ultra world or get back to some speed on the track or the beer mile? What are you thinking?
Right, all of the above, mate. Yeah. I actually this year I managed to do a 50K in May as well, up the Blue Mountains, the Ultra Trail Australia 50. So that was a lot of fun, and had a lot of good times training for that with some mates here in Newcastle, and getting into the trails and the hills around the place. So really enjoyed that, and I've signed up for that. It's the one event I've entered for next year as well. Really well organised event. Anyone considering doing that, I'd urge you to put it on your list at some point. It's just a beautiful part of the world and a really well organised event. So within a 21 week period this year, mate, I had my goal was to break PBs from 5Ks to 50Ks. I got them all, 5, 10, 50 marathon, missed the half by 7 seconds. At a hilly course out the back in the Hunter Valley here just a couple of weeks after the Gold Coast. So that's the big one to tick off for next year, mate. I thought I'd go chasing it in Melbourne this year, wanting to, you know, cash in on the fitness that you've got after the marathon. But in the end, I thought, no, I've done enough, let it go, and I'll try and tick that one off next year. So, yeah, and we'll see. I'll, you know, try and keep touching up the Parkrun PB and see if I can touch a few of them up again next year. We'll see. I kind of think, I haven't really trained consistently for the last few years, just with a couple of little kids coming along and other commitments and stuff. So it was nice to be able to have the time and effort to train, and there's really no way around it. You need to do the time and put the work in to get these rewards, and hopefully continue to taste a bit more success in the next few years.
Yeah, just on that though, like, how do you balance it all? Like, obviously young kids and the media stuff and the full-time physio, like, is that a hard juggling act at times?
It can be, mate, yeah. And to be honest, the running was the thing that was I wasn't hitting. And it was crazy because here I am advocating running, advocating movement, commentating races, interviewing some of the best athletes in the country, and I wasn't actually putting in the time and effort to get out for my runs. You know, I reckon I'd August last year, might have done 7 hours of training in total. I started using Strava a bit and logging a few things, a bit anti-naked running, but I look back at some of those weeks and months, and I was having air swings all over the place. So it was just good to get back and get some consistency. I've got my wife to thank. She's been the breadwinner a little bit more this year, and I've been playing daddy daycare. So that sort of allowed me to have that time, and just, I guess you make the time, don't you?
Yeah, you get up earlier, go to bed later, all those kind of things.
Exactly. If it's important enough, you make it happen. And I looked at other friends of mine here in Newcastle who, same situation, young kids, more kids than me even, and younger kids than me, and they're still getting out, hitting their long runs and doing some amazing things on trails and marathons and whatever. So I thought, no, look, it's time to just make that decision and get out there and do what you love again, do what you're crapping on about all the time. And I've had my most enjoyable and best year of running in to date, I reckon. And I've got that bug back again, and great to just hang out with mates on the long run, have those chats, hang out with all the different running groups and be part of it and get that buzz that only a runner knows and only gets after those runs. So, balance wise, mate, yeah, things can change week to week, day to day, but yeah, I guess just try and prioritize what you enjoy, what's important, make time for those things. But also, yeah, obviously family is important, and earning a dollar here and there so you can feed everyone is important too. So yeah. It's a balance. Look, I've got to say, mate, I probably haven't been as poor as I have, as I am this year, but rich in so many other ways. And, you know, often other young parents will say you don't get this time back with your kids as well. So it's nice to spend that time. They probably get sick of me, my two girls, Grace and Emma, but it's awesome to spend time with them and see them grow up. It happens pretty quickly, and they're very lucky to have been a part of their upbringing and squeeze a few runs in at the same time. And, yeah, so it's good, mate. It's been nice. It is a challenge, and I admire you know, anyone that's finding the time to get that exercise, be it, you know, longest distance running or whatever, going to the gym a few times a week, making that decision to get off the couch and go and use your body the way it's designed to.
For sure. Hey, mate, you got a recommendation of a book or a podcast or a documentary running related for the listeners out there? You seen anything recently?
Obviously, Inside Running podcast, killing it at the moment.
Thanks.
If you're particularly bored, you can go and listen to 69 episodes of the Naked Runners podcast, fairly outdated now.
There's a good guest there, though. I was just flicking through before. Even Martin Yelling, you had him on for a marathon talk, and Gregson and Dave McNeil's on there.
Oh, yeah, we went through the MTC, at one point. That was good fun.
Did you find it got to a stage, though? Because this is what I'm probably finding a bit where... Like the first kind of 30 episodes were easy. I could just go through my phone or my, Facebook Messenger and go like, oh yeah, he'll be good. We'll organize that for next week. Or she'll be good. But now I'm just like, I've got to do a bit more. I've already hit that inner circle. Now I've got to go and people start emailing in saying, oh, you should do one with this person. And I'm like, I don't actually know that person at all. But so it's going to be hard to talk to him for 90 minutes in a way.
Exactly. And then to try and keep them topical too, someone just blitzes a marathon in Berlin or whatever, and you want to try and get them on that next week after they've got their name in lights a little bit. It is hard, mate. But there's a lot of people running out there, and even as you've done on this podcast, having some pretty down to earth chats with runners of all levels and abilities, and not just the ones that are more known in the athletics and running world. I'm sure you'll be fine, mate. I'm sure you'll keep getting suggestions and. You can always go back and interview the same person again, like we did with Scott Westcott. We kept trotting him out.
Well, I reckon something's in that. Like, people enjoy... Because I think people almost just like being a fly on the wall. It's just two people, three people having a conversation, just listening to their conversation, and they actually want to know what that person's been up to after you've spoken to them for 90 minutes. So having those, Rick, and Joe Rogan does it really well. He'll get, pretty much the biggest podcast in the world, gets a million downloads a week, but he'll just get his mates on once a month and they'll just talk about whatever they're talking about.
No, I don't mind that approach at all. One non-running related podcast that I reckon is I'm probably going to go for a run after I chat to you now and go and have a listen to it, half an hour a week, but it's the Santo Sam and Ed Total Football podcast. So I've got a bit of a geeky football fan in me. Those blokes, and often, it wouldn't matter what those blokes spoke about, but seriously, I find myself laughing out loud on the run, just grinning that from ear to ear that entire run whenever I listen to those guys. So that's one. If you haven't heard that yet, that's a good non-running podcast to go and check out.
That's interesting. I haven't listened to it, but The Age did an article of the top 10 local podcasts, and they put Tell Me Your Tales in it, and they were also in it. We were like Will Anderson. We got put in with all these big names. I don't know how we got in there, but I did see that one in there. What about running stuff? You got a good running doco or a book or something?
Mate, I churned through a few running books this year. I did read Herb Elliott's The Golden Mile, which I see Runners Tribe have reissued recently. That's really good. I read having met Seb Coe at the Nitro event, I wanted to get across his story a bit more. So I read Pat Butcher's book, I forget the title of it, but yeah, it's all about Steve Ovett and Seb Coe. That's really, really interesting. I've got one on my table right now, which is Haruki Murakami's What I Talk About When I Talk About Running. That's gathering
dust. That's good. That's a good one.
I've read the first four pages, but that's on the list to go and read. So
it's pretty small as well. You'll get through that one quick.
That's right, mate. It could do with a few more pictures in it. It's got big words, but it'll be good. But yeah, mate, I haven't read a lot lately. I've been running too much, maybe. I've got to start reading a bit more.
New Boston Marathon documentary comes out today. It's
brilliant.
It's Thursday, the 7th of December, I think. So, yeah, that might be worth checking out, I reckon. That's Matt Damon's narrating it and it looks good for a running movie. Sometimes they're a bit sketchy running docos and stuff, but this one looks legit.
Good. Look forward to it.
Beautiful, mate. Well, the last question I always ask people if they've got a bit of a mantra or a philosophy or a... I don't know, a bit of an inspirational quote that they try to live their life by. Has Dave Robbo got anything?
The best one I can think of, mate, this is handed down to me from my dear father, Ian Robbo, and I'm sure it relates to running in some way, but I often used to relate it to playing cricket. And having played cricket for a few seasons over in Edinburgh, where the weather wasn't always as sunny and bright as we get here in Australia, and you'd get there early and there'd be a bit of drizzle around. You weren't sure if you were playing or not. You're trying to get your head around whether you're going to be batting or bowling or even getting on for a game. Anyway, his quote was, "Dave, it's on till it's off." All right, so just treat the game as being on till it's off. So I think treat that to your running as well. It's on till it's off. It's just assume you're going to be going for a run every day or more days than not, and don't find excuses to eke out of it. Just use that simple rule. Look, and whether it's, I know most listeners here will be runners themselves. Well done for picking running. I think it's the best thing you can do in terms of physical activity. But if it's not running or you're not able to run, get on a bike, go to the gym, go for a swim, whatever it is, play soccer with your mates, play touch footy. But, something on in terms of physical exercise. What does the World Health Organization recommend? We should be doing half an hour at least five times a week. I think we can all find half an hour in a day. So there you go, mate. It's on till it's off. That's my legacy for you. I'm about to bring up, hopefully, if all goes well, I'm hopefully about to bring up my first ever 1 year running streak on about New Year's Eve. So that's been my little thing. 5Ks a day, even if it's a 6 minute per K shuffle some days, just trying to get that consistency. And I've really enjoyed doing that. So I'll get out for my half an hour run very shortly, inspired by my chat with you, mate. But
That's impressive after three marathons as well. Like the day after a marathon is rough, and you've still got out there for 5K.
The one after the UTA 50 was pretty rough too. I was staying in a place in Lura up in the Blue Mountains, trying desperately to find a flat bit of road. And if any locals know, Benny St. Lawrence is from up that way. It's hilly as hell all around there. So, mate, I've said hello to a few 7 minute Ks.
Some of those, wrong with that.
Not at all, but I got it done. And good or bad, I think it did, when the legs did finally thaw out, hopefully it did a little bit of good, getting a bit of blood flowing around. But I mean, the physio in me would say, "What are you doing, you idiot? Have a week off, let the body, recover and absorb what you've done to it." But now that was my little thing, and it's got me going again. And having had a few quiet years and months, it's got me going, and it's not a question of am I going to run today. It's when am I going to do it, and where is it going to be, and who with, and so I try, and to go back to I guess where the chat started, I still try and adopt those principles that I said at the start when I wanted to re-liven up my running experience and enjoy it, and make sure that we always do enjoy it for sure. Chase the PBs. Hit your training programs, hit your sessions, do your races, tick the boxes, but never forget that why we do it. We do it for the fun of it. Our bodies are designed to do it. We do it very, very well, and we need to unleash that running body, more days than not.
Beautiful spot to leave it, mate. I couldn't agree more. If the listeners like, I reckon most of my listeners would follow you already online, but give us your handles just in case they don't.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, at Mr. Dave Robbo. It should work across anything.
And your old podcast, that's under Mossy and Robbo, isn't it?
We had some branding crises over the years. I think if you look for Mossy and Robbo Radio, you'll get it there. I don't know what you get with the Naked Runners these days. You could find stuff. I'll give you the hot tip though. Don't search Naked Runners without being prepared to see some pretty average stuff on Google. So
especially,
yeah,
maybe, if you're at work listening to this and you're going to do it on the works Wi-Fi, just go. It's a good way to not get fired.
Yeah. So yeah, the Naked Runners, and they've got at the Naked Runners, you'll find some stuff on there, and at Mossy and Robbo, it still does exist. So you can follow a bit of that too, and we'll look forward to firing that up as we get closer to the Comm Games up at the Gold Coast too.
Beautiful, mate. Appreciate your time on this Thursday afternoon. It's been good talking running, and I definitely think there's a part two and a part three and a part four in this one. Every month we could nearly catch up and talk about running news.
Be happy to, mate. And once again, great work yourself, all you do for the running community, to put the effort and the time into doing not just one podcast, mate, but two these days. And it's been great to have a chat with you and share a few stories about running today.
No worries, Robbo. Thanks again for your time.
Good on you. Happy running.
Through you, you come from the Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.